Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval, terms apply.
Once again, it is Tuesday. It is the Out of Sight podcast. It is the summer engagement series. It is the Sixers Multiverse podcast. It is a podcast where we go back in time, either kind of recently or in today's case, about, I don't know, almost 30 years ago. But this time, we're going to the year 1993. And unfortunately, my co-host, my regular co-host, Dave Early, is unavailable. He is on vacation having fun with family. But I have someone that has transported to this universe to step in for David as we venture into another universe. It's Jazz Kang, who I've had on the podcast maybe once or twice. And I always feel bad that I can't have him on more often. But Jazz, how you doing?
I'm good. I think it's good that you don't have me often too much, too often, because I think people will get sick of hearing my voice. So it's not a bad thing.
You would think people are tired of hearing Dave at this point also, but apparently they kind of like our pairing. So we're going to have to work on something for full time next season.
Hey, it is a good pairing. It is a good pairing. So I think people are fans of that. But yeah, when it comes to me, yeah, you guys keep doing your thing and leave me out as much as possible. I think the people appreciate that.
Okay, that's fine. you're in there with Paul all the time, so you know what? People get their fill with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got that. You got that right.
Now, when it comes to you, how do you stand when it comes to like past Sixers history, like before 2000, we'll say, before the Iverson era?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up a NBA fan too. So I mean, I was born in the early '80s. So for me, I mean, I've been well versed in the NBA for a long time. I loved watching it. I kind of knew a lot about the big name teams as well, you know, from the Western Conference to the Eastern Conference. So for me, pretty well versed in what's happened with not only the Sixers history, but a lot of the Eastern Conference teams as well.
Okay, so just so folks know, Jazz is stamped and bona fide for this podcast. He has my personal recommendation. So I don't want to hear any nonsense in the Menchies when this podcast comes out tomorrow. Let's start with the state of the team going into the 93 draft, like we always do. They were 26 and 56 between two head coaches, Doug Moe and Fred Carter. And Doug Moe, I believe, was the one that was fired midseason, and Fred Carter kind of took over. Jim Lynham was the general manager, and it was the first year after the Charles Barkley trade. Personally, I was only 13 years old at the time, and I was still kind of forming my basketball knowledge, my basketball fandom, but I really did like Barkley in a Sixers uniform, especially those really weird red, white, and blue all over the place jerseys. It was kind of ridiculous. I didn't own one, thank God, because I feel like I would have got laughed at school. But after after the Barkley trade, there was almost no hope in this town because they didn't have a franchise player. The pieces they got back for Barkley were kind of not good. It goes down as one of the worst trades in Sixers history, if not NBA history. So if you were a Sixers fan going into the 93 draft and the 93 offseason, like how would you have felt after a season like that with so much changeover and just no real like, oh, my God, this is going to be like dark era of the Sixers franchise?
Well, you got to look back at it with the ownership, right? Like Harold Katz was the owner of the team, and if you look at him getting involved in a lot of the day-to-day decisions, the personnel decisions, that never turns out well. You know, right. What I mean, you look at the current day where you got a team like the Warriors. You remember before they had Joe Lacob as the primary owner, they weren't a very good franchise, right?
That's right.
And now he's come along and basically changed the way they do things, changed the quote unquote culture of the organization with putting the money up, making sure the players are treated well, doesn't give a crap. I mean, obviously he's rich enough, but doesn't give a crap about the luxury tax.
Right. So
I think you look back at with Harold Katz with Charles Barkley, it was something that had ran its course. Now, again, a good owner would look at Charles Barkley and say, well, we got one of the best players, you know, of all time, really, and maybe a top 20, 25 guy of all time on our roster. Let's not screw this up, because he's also, as we know now, been very marketable throughout his post-career too. So I think looking at the way things had broken down there, I would have been hopeless too, because if the owner is like that and the owner is unable to provide stability and provide resources to the organization, chances are the team that you root for is not going to be very good at all.
And you can say that about any sport with ownership, right? You can say that about baseball, basketball, football, hockey, whatever. If the owner is a little too hands-on, it's fine if he has like good basketball knowledge. But for example, my favorite comparison is like Jerry Jones for the Dallas Cowboys. Like, I honestly don't think he really knows how to build a football team. He's just out here playing fantasy. Like, the Cowboys on paper always look good, but when you put the pieces together, it doesn't work. So the fact that Harold Katz is out here and saying, okay, we need to do this Barkley trade, we need to get him out of here, I don't know if this is the right fit. Like, I don't understand what he was thinking at the time. And it just goes to speak to, hey, you need to have high caliber, high IQ basketball people in these kinds of general manager positions or president of basketball operations positions.
Oh, for sure. And you look at, I mean, like you just look at what the team was like and the organization was like at the time. Obviously you had the early 80s with Dr. J and you know, making the finals a few times and winning that championship in 83. So you're hopeful then. And then we saw what happened through that other stretch with Katz, you know, kind of calling the shots. But I think that's where it's a tough thing, man. And you know, we've seen that now with the new Sixers ownership, where, okay, you see, they seem like they're dedicated. They seem like they're committed to spending the resources. They have Daryl Morey, and they seem like they're kind of backing off on him and saying, hey, do your thing, get the players you want. Let's try and go out and win a chip. And I think that's where things turn out good. But you look back at that at Barkley deal in 92. I mean, Jeff Hornacek was a nice player.
He was all right.
Yeah, he was a super, not a superstar, but a very good, NBA player. I want to say very good. Andrew Lang, Tim Perry, obviously nothing to remember. But I think if you look back at it, there were options that the Sixers could have tried to make that work. They didn't necessarily have to deal him at that time. And obviously for something as underwhelming as that, like if the Brooklyn Nets, who obviously aren't a huge fan base and you know, have this major footprint, but if they traded Kevin Durant for that type of package today, I think they'd burn down the Barclays Center. You know what I mean?
Hell yeah.
And even like going back to what you're saying, like with Jerry Jones, right? Jerry Jones loves to be in the limelight, loves to have the cameras in front of him, loves to talk, loves to, obviously he's like a de facto general manager there. And we've seen the results. Sure, they won those Super Bowls, those three Super Bowls in the mid 90s. But since then, it's been crickets. And you look at, obviously, the foundation that Jimmy Johnson had laid there. Obviously, Barry Switzer got to take advantage of that, too. But looking at that, since then, they've never been able to get it right. Because, and I'm a firm believer in this, too, Adio, is that if you're an owner, own the team, run the business side of it. Obviously,
yes,
you have the resources because that's what you're good at. But hire the right guys, as you mentioned, like a director of player personnel. Hire the right GM. Make sure you're having a coach in place. Hire the right trainers. All these little things have to kind of form and work out in order to not only be a playoff team, but be a championship level team and sustain that success, which, again, like you look at, I'm using the Warriors because they're kind of the poster child now for the last decade of how good they've been. But even as Steph and Clay and Draymond start aging out, they're going to have guys like Jordan Poole coming up. Yeah, they stunk for a couple of years there, but they got Jonathan Kuminga. They got Moses Moody. Those are some shrewd moves made by Bob Myers to have those assets when Durant left. So I think you want to have those pieces in place where you're not going to be a title contender every year, but you want to make sure that you are at least sustaining excellence. And I think that's what makes the difference between a good franchise in the professional sports world and a bad one.
Now, this was the starting five going into the 93 season, and this was game one. So, Percy Hawkins, Hornacek, Armin Gilliam, Clarence Witherspoon, who I'll touch on in a second, and Andrew Lang with, like, no real bench to speak of. And as it turns out, rookie Spoon was probably a little bit better than people thought. He averaged almost 16 points a game, 7 rebounds a game. And looking at that scenario, definitely screamed like good stats on a bad team guy, but not maybe not necessarily a franchise guy. That's the kind of sense that I got from Spoon's rookie year. I don't know if you kind of agree with that.
Yeah, I think Witherspoon, I mean, you could tell he put up numbers, obviously not a very good Sixers team. He was still there in Iverson's first year, but looking at his numbers, he was a capable NBA guy, but I'm with you too. I mean, I think we've talked about this once in the podcast before, but you look at Mike James from the Toronto Raptors. I think they were like a 22 win team, and he averaged 20 points, parlayed that into a big contract with the Timberwolves, and then stunk when he got there. So yeah, I'm with you. I think that, you know, he was a good stats on a bad team guy. Obviously I like Daniel Barros. I thought he had a very nice career, a good shooter, good guard, but yeah, Witherspoon wasn't terrible, but on a championship team, is he even a starter? I don't know about that. Maybe as a good bench guy, but he's one of those players that didn't exactly scream potential superstar because he's putting up 15 and 18 points a game his first few years in the league.
They continued on with Fred Carter as head coach, even though he had only amassed, it was like a 7-19 record. Part of that probably roster, but well, not probably, mostly roster, but I mean, according to Basketball Reference, they were ninth in pace, if that counts for anything, back in the 90s. The 93 draft came around, and everything that I've been reading, Harold Katz and Jim Lynham really wanted Sean Bradley. And that always makes me shudder, because I'm like, okay, they really want this guy. First of all, why? Second of all, if they really want this particular player, is there any point to really trying to talk him out of it? Like, if you're a head coach and you're just like, okay, you really want Sean Bradley, all right, fine. That's who you want. I'm not even gonna try to talk you out of it. And then we'll just succeed or fail, and it's on you guys. But that's never how it works, because it's always the coach that gets fired.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're right. And you've seen this happen so many times. And again, I think a good owner and a good general manager would be adaptable, right? Try and figure out, okay, we have our eyes on this guy. Unless obviously that everybody knew that your Chris Webber was going to go number one.
Yep.
Just like there's certain years where we know guys like Zion Williamson are going to go number one. I'm not comparing Webber to LeBron James, but I'm saying those are like the guaranteed, you know, that guy is going to go first overall.
Guaranteed, bona fide, don't even put him on your draft board.
You don't even need to. But then I think the rest of the board should be, okay, you have your board laid out that these are our best players available. We can go with it. But you're looking at that, like you mentioned, Bradley didn't play for two seasons, right? Before he was at BYU, took a two-year a mission basically that he was out in, I think it was Australia or England, one of the two places, and doing his thing, and that's okay, but the guy's not working out playing basketball, and he's not a naturally gifted athlete who might have been able to skip a workouts for a month and get back on track, you know, within a couple of weeks of training. He just didn't have it. And I think that when you look at it, they looked at him as if he was going to be the face of the franchise. He was going to be the savior in Philly with the Sixers. And clearly that was not a good decision.
I wonder if they drafted him to be a member of the 76ers just because he was in fact 7'6". I always wonder if that was part of it.
Of course. The matching up like that, maybe they thought they can get cute with their marketing or something.
Oh my God.
Whatever the hell it was. But we know that even if that was the case, that Katz and the linemen were not very good at their jobs.
Now, granted, the Golden State Warriors made a King's ransom trade for the number one pick and Chris Webber. They gave up the number three pick and like multiple first round picks, which if you don't know the history of what those picks turned into, seriously, Google that, look it up. It's hilarious. It is hilarious what those picks turned into. But Webber going number one and Sixers sitting there at two, they take Bradley. And I remember at the time, like going to school the next day and just hearing people talk like, I don't know why we took this guy. Yeah, he's really tall, but can he really play? Like you can be tall and not be good in basketball. I've seen it happen. You know, like it happens. In rec ball all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
At the time, I don't know. Would you have done that at number two?
Oh, I think, okay, looking back.
Are you the type of guy that would have looked Harold Katz? Okay, Jazz, you're the head coach of the Philadelphia 76ers in the 93 draft. Harold Katz and Jim Lynham come to you and they're like, look, we really want Sean Bradley. We're taking Sean Bradley. Are you the kind of person that says, okay, wait a second, can we at least formulate a tier list so I can at least produce you some numbers so that like you can see where different people can fit in different positions on this team?
Oh, for sure. I mean, looking back at it now, but you got to remember a deal back in the day at that time that, you know, the phrase would have been, you can't teach 7'6". You can't teach height. You know, you've heard that. But the 90s, the deal, you got to remember the centers were amazing. I mean, how many Hall of Famers do you have there, right? You got David Robinson, you got Hakeem Olajuwon, Patrick Ewing. Obviously, Shaq came up, drafted in 92. So you're looking at this like, okay, you need a big man. You need a center in order to compete with the heavyweights in the NBA.
Okay.
So I get the thinking behind why wanted to take him. But again, just looking at him and looking at the fact that, like, dude, at the time, I mean, I was still a young kid myself, but looking at it back, like in hindsight, why the hell would you take a guy who hasn't played in 2 years?
What I mean? That's the big thing for me.
Yeah. It's like, what were you thinking at that time? That you're taking a 21-year-old kid who hasn't played basketball, literally touched a friggin' ball, and he's in England of all places. It's not like he's in like a Lithuania or somewhere where they, you know, the basketball is kind of is key. It's Serbia. Like they have these big basketball cultures that people care. You could have got to a gym like in England, and nobody cares about basketball. I'm sure they have over the last, you know, 10, 15 years with the marketing, but it was just, to me, it's the lack of depth of the thinking that Katz showed. It's a lack of depth of thinking that Lynham showed. That would have been frustrating to me at that point, because I'm with you too. I would have woke up the next day and been like, why the hell did they take this guy? There's no reason to take him.
7'6", 240. Sure, he's got the height for it, but he didn't really have, I'm looking back at like old rookie pictures of this guy. He did not exactly have a frame built for banging down low with the Olajuwons and the Ewings and the Shaqs, and not even the Bill Cartwrights at the time.
Oh no, those guys would have swallowed him up whole. You know what I mean? Like if you look at him now at 245, like, and that's the thing too, because like when we talked about doing this podcast, I look back at I compared it to, obviously not the same height, but you look at Chet Holmgren, right?
Yeah,
Chet Holmgren is very slender, probably going to stay that way. Like we've seen Kevin Durant stay roughly the same, you know, size. He hasn't put on a lot of girth since he joined the league. Obviously, though, Kevin Durant is an exception for that. But even like Chet, you can look at his frame and be like, yeah, he's probably not going to put on too much weight. I'm sure he'll add some size and strength as he goes along. But you look at Bradley, like he had the width because he looked a little bit more filled out as he got older. You know what I mean? As he played in the league, especially with the Mavericks there.
He did look a little bigger with the Mavericks. I will say that.
He did. Like, I mean, again, he wasn't huge, but he
not
looked
a huge. No.
Yeah, but he put on some size. But again, you look at the work ethic, you look at what the option would have been for him and the opportunity. And he clearly, like, you look back at like Scott Williams, one of his former teammates there, he played with the Bulls after, he said that he's like, the guy just didn't want to put the work in. And that's not that he wasn't a good guy or a nice person, you know what I mean, and a good teammate. But the fact is, if he didn't put the work in England, if you just would have maybe had a meeting with him in person and you would have been able to see that or hold a workout. I mean, again, technology is a lot different now than it was.
Very true. Then.
But at the same time, it's like, if you just would have seen this guy and maybe said, okay, he hasn't played basketball in 2 years. He's been spending time in England. He's dedicated to his Mormon mission. Maybe let's stay away from that. And again, perhaps they take I'm not going to get into Penny Hardaway. I'm sure we'll get really deep into that. But, you know, you could have taken Jamal Mashburn. You could have traded the pick. You had so many other options there that you could have done with that selection. And obviously, you look at it now in hindsight that Lynam and Harold Katz made the wrong decision.
I mean, Bradley's numbers weren't terrible his rookie year, but 10 points a game, 6 rebounds, 3 blocks. So, like, the block numbers were there, which is, I'm assuming, why he looked so attractive. But then the 40% from the field, when you're 7'6", I'm sorry, if your field goal percentage isn't in, like, the 60s, like, I'm pretty sure George Mirason had, like, a 60% field goal percentage. Like, Boban was up there in field goal percentage. He was close to 70 one year. I can't remember.
Oh, yeah.
And then year two, he had the 82 games, started 59 of them, but the numbers didn't really translate to getting the increased workload. And then he was traded in his third year to the New Jersey Nets, along with Greg Graham and Tim Perry, for Derek Coleman. I believe that was his second stint in Philadelphia. Sean Higgins and Rex Walters. Shout out to Rex Walters on Twitter if he's listening. But all of that, meanwhile, Penny is out here flourishing in Orlando, and Jamal Mashburn turned into, like, this potential franchise scorer in Dallas.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the frustrating part, man. I mean, looking back at it, you look at the opportunity they could have had to get one of those guys and set the foundation. Now, here's the key, though, Adia. I will ask you this.
All right.
Let's say they do take Penny Hardaway, right?
Okay.
Maybe they win, 35 games his rookie year. But, I mean, obviously, he reinvigorates the franchise. He gets the fan base going because Penny Hardaway was a freak. His injuries cost him a great and potential Hall of Fame career.
Penny at least makes you look interesting.
Oh, Penny makes you relevant, right? Penny absolutely makes you relevant. He's going to have posters. There would have been Sixers games on NBC as he continued throughout his career.
Yeah.
On NBC back then, they would have been nationally televised. And that wasn't like it is now that you get all 82 games. Back then, you might see, you know, on a national basis or even on a local basis, you might only see 50 games. You know what I mean? But
right.
Looking back at it, see, here's the trade-off. Let's say you do take Penny in 93. Then you go through two seasons with him. Do they still get Iverson in 96?
Hold that thought. Okay. Hold that. We'll get to that. But before we do that, because I feel like that you're ready to go to the alternate universe. So we need to get into the capsule so that we can safely travel to a different universe. Because I don't want any, you know, I don't want your molecular structure to get split in half as we travel. So let's take a quick commercial break. We'll say hi to some of the sponsors here on the Liberty Ballers Podcast Network. We'll be back from an alternate universe, and we'll talk about Hardaway and Iverson and all that. We'll get to it. I swear to God, we will. But back in a second, it is the Out of Sight Podcast special summer engagement series. It is the Sixers Multiverse Podcast. Be right back after a message from these brief words.
This message comes from Apple Card. Earn up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase every day. Then grow it at 4.50% annual percentage yield when you open a savings account with Apple Card. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card subject to credit approval. Savings available to Apple Card owners subject to eligibility. Savings accounts provided by Goldman Sachs Bank USA. Member FDIC. Terms apply.
Okay, we're back. We have exited the capsule. We're in a different universe. I'm here with Jazz Kang. He's joining me on the pod because Dave is in his own alternate universe. And Jazz started getting into it, so we'll just start right now. I don't want to touch on Iverson just yet, but what I will say, if the Sixers took Hardaway with the second pick, then the lineup is, I'm guessing, Hardaway, Hornacek, Spoon, Warren Kidd, and Moses, old Moses, but they also have Manute Bol on the team. So at the very least, you could put two people together and have a kind of center. With the bench, you have Dana Barros, as you mentioned, Tim Perry, and Johnny Dawkins. And Dawkins was not too bad as a bench scorer. Like, I would have taken that. I think Hardaway and Spoon would definitely be a nice pair to build with. And you were talking about before, they might not go to the playoffs or anything like that, but they're relevant with those two guys. I still think the Sixers may have a shot to draft Stackhouse in 95, meaning the Sixers, quote unquote, big three of 95 would have been Hardaway, Stackhouse, and Spoon. That's something.
That's something to start. But again, I mean, looking back at, you look at the Sixers picks at that time, they blew their 94 pick, ended up taking Sherrone Wright. He was freaking terrible. You know what I mean? And then I always liked Jerry Stackhouse's game. I thought he was obviously a very, very good player. Liked what he did at North Carolina. But yeah, you have a base. You have a base started there. But how good is that base? Like, do you have enough, do you think, in order to contend for? Because like we said, Clarence Weatherspoon, good player. Not exactly I would look at as a pillar that you're like, wow, we have this guy on our roster. We could build around him. Whereas it would be the opposite with a Penny Hardaway. And then you have Jerry Stackhouse maybe as a second fiddle. So I don't know, man. I mean, I think the team still, and you look back at it, you know, how the Sixers did, what did they win, like 24 games and then 18 in 95, yeah, 96, the year they got Iverson. So again, they would have had some potential there, but I don't know how much you're trusting that ownership and that general manager group, that basically their executives, to make the right decisions to surround those guys with the right players in order to maybe change things around going forward.
I also still believe that, I mean, Spoon as a third fiddle to Hardaway and Stackhouse, I think that works, but still don't really have a big man to contend with the Ewings and the Shaqs at the time. So that may have severely hurt their playoff chances. Now, you kind of hinted to it. The big question, does drafting Hardaway in 93 cost the Sixers the shot to draft Iverson in 96? With everything that you just laid out, with the ownership not being able to put the right players around them and get the coach and the organizational structure and the culture and all like that, I'm not 1,000% sure the Sixers don't have the chance to draft him in 96.
Really? You don't think so?
I think there's still a legitimate shot if, you know, let's say that the team really preferred Iverson over Hardaway. Maybe they trade Hardaway and future assets. See, I'm doing the Sam Hinkie thing in the 90s, which doesn't always work out the way I think it will. But I mean, with real quick, with Hardaway, Spoon, and Stack, I think the Sixers maybe compete for a playoff spot in 95 if the free agency market pans out right. And that being the case, yes, totally cost them Iverson in 96. And that's where you get the severe franchise turnaround. I don't think this group wins a title without some real creative free agency, because, you know, late 90s, you're talking about Jordan, you're talking about those Knicks teams, you're talking about those Pacer teams, talking about, you know, the Charlotte Hornets teams with Mourning and Larry Johnson. Just, yeah, it's rough. It's tough to think about.
Oh, for sure. But again, man, I mean, you look at it, I think those guys that you mentioned in terms of Hardaway was a game changer, right?
Yeah.
Just an amazing basketball player, would have came in and won the hearts of everybody in Philly. You know what I mean? Right away, just the way he played, his game, his style.
Kind of like the Markelle Fultz of the mid-90s.
Yeah. I don't think we want to go there, right? But
I'll continue to go there. That's fine. I don't care.
Okay. What? Okay. Let me see. What are the parallels between Fultz and Hardaway?
Just what you said. Like the work ethic. Like I feel like fans would really be drawn to him. Just like, listen, the kid is in here. He's out here working. Maybe he's not perfect, but damn it, he's ours. You know, that kind of thing.
He's trying. Yeah. Okay. I get you. I meant
trying
on the court. Trying on the court. I mean, to me, Penny was, as I mentioned, well on his way to a Hall of Fame career. But I think even then, the Sixers would have been in a situation that they would have had the picks and the talent just with that guy, with Penny alone, that they would have been able to, it would have ruined their chances at getting the number one overall pick is what I'm looking at it like from that perspective. Right. So again, you look at it, the 94, 95 year, the Sixers won 24 games. And then you look at it the year after that, where I think the Grizzlies and they had the worst record, Vancouver Grizzlies at the time.
Yeah.
one of the worst record in the league, the Raptors, but something with their expansion rules that they weren't able to have the number one pick, which allowed the Sixers to win the draft coming off an 18 win season, or win the draft lottery, pardon me. So when you have that, again, maybe they win 29, 30 games with Hardaway there. So you leapfrog teams like Dallas and Minnesota in terms of the draft lottery. And of course, the Bucks weren't very good back then either. But again, you look at that 96 draft, maybe they don't get the number one overall pick. And I think everybody would trade it in for the fact that what Iverson meant and is to the city of Philly. So you would have had, let's say you don't get Iverson, but maybe you get a guy like Ray Allen. Maybe you get a Sharif Abdur-Rahim, a Stephon Marbury. Maybe the management at the time goes, screw it. You know what? Kobe Bryant played. So there's so many little things you could have looked at. Steve Nash was you know, obviously two-time MVP, future Hall of Famer. Like, you could have had a base of
Peja Stojakovic is there.
Yeah, Peja Stojakovic. Like, Antoine Walker had a good career. So all these guys from that draft, the 96 is historically looked back as one of the greatest drafts of all time, if not the greatest, just because of the sheer talent level that was produced from that class. And if you look at it, if you get Hardaway in 93, you know, maybe you make a trade. Maybe you don't screw things up in 94 with Sherrone Wright, but you get Stackhouse in 95 and things break your way still. And instead of Iverson, you get a forward, you get another guard. Like, that just changes everything. You know what I mean?
You get maybe somebody like a Jermaine O'Neal, who Portland took at 17 that year.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And there were so many good. Like, Sharif Abdur-Rahim played on crappy teams his whole career. He's not a bad second or third option on a very good team, right? You look back at the numbers he put up, he wouldn't have been a bad option. Again, you could have had Ray Allen running alongside Penny Hardaway, right? With Jerry Stackhouse at the three. You could have bought in Kobe Bryant and let him get his seasoning as a rookie in year one, potentially then looked at him and been like, wow, this guy's going to be great. We could trade Stackhouse and get a forward or get a center. You know what I mean? Like, there are so many different things that go back through, and it's like these little domino effects that each year the organization, one decision can either set you up or screw you up for the near future. And I think that's what, looking back at that 93 selection of Sean Bradley, my mind goes to when looking at what could have been for the Sixers going forward.
See, and that's why I love looking back, and that's why I'm enjoying this podcast so much, like this series, because looking back, I'm just thinking now just how crazy the town would have been if, like, our backcourt was Penny and Kobe. Ooh. If you're trading Stackhouse to put Kobe there, then maybe you have, like, a Spoon coming off the bench where his game probably suits to him feasting on second tier players or bench scorers. You get somebody, you trade Stackhouse for, like, that big man, whoever it may be. Names escape me right now, but, like, Kobe and Penny is that is relevant, that is marketable, that is something that is attractive to other free agents. Like, I agree with you. Like, that, The 93 and 94 drafts, like, those were two epic screw-ups in the mid-90s.
Oh, 100%, man. And like you said, like, you always look back at this and you look at, like, the chain reaction of what could have been and what would have happened and could have happened. I mean, even look back at 97, where they draft Keith Van Horn, ship him off immediately to the Nets. And don't, you know, Tim Thomas, I liked his game, but again, not great. Jim Jackson, very decent NBA player, hung around for 14 years. Eric Montross, wouldn't have had to get him because he would have had fucking Sean Bradley. You know what I mean? So there's
they only wanted Tim Thomas back because he went to Villanova. That was the only reason they made that trade.
Yeah, there's only, and so again, like, you look at what the ownership and general manager, like I said, the executive team was thinking at this point. You're like, yeah, no wonder why they stunk for that long time. They lucked out to get Iverson. He obviously is a super duper star, changed the trajectory of that franchise, won an MVP, took him to a finals in 2001. So for me, I look at it like, what could have been with that team? Yeah, you might have to take Iverson off the board, let's say. And again, in our multiverse that we're in right now, the alternate universe, you got Penny Hardaway, who never gets hurt. You might have Jerry Stackhouse, who could turn into a trade chip. You could have Kobe Bryant, obviously playing at Lower Merion there in high school. But you could have, things would have turned out so much different. Now, I got to ask you this, Adil. I'll put you on the spot a little bit. Let's say they do.
Because I love Penny. It when people do that to me.
Okay, well, let's say they do take Penny, right? Let's say that they get Penny. They have Jerry Stackhouse. Whatever happens in 96, I'm not going to sit there and say they get Kobe or not, because obviously looking back, Jerry West had the foresight to be like, that's the guy we're going to go for at number 13. But, getting the trade from the Hornets and just sending over Vlade Divac. So obviously give him credit for that. But when you look at it,
Don't like where this is going.
No. Where do you, let's just say they don't take Iverson. Do you think the Sixers make an NBA finals? Do you think in the next 4 or 5 years after that, do you think that, they're in the national spotlight for an extended period like they were with AI on the roster?
So saying they don't get Iverson in 96, do I think they compete for a championship?
But they got Penny still. They had Penny.
They still have Penny, but they don't have Kobe.
Yeah.
Probably not, unless the 97-98 drafts really break their way. Like, let's say that Penny's injuries really start to take hold and the Sixers get the number one pick in 97, which is, the greatest power forward of all time, Mr. Tim Duncan. That's something. And then if it's Penny and Duncan, then maybe they come back. Maybe they come back and here's something. Maybe they come back and they have the foresight and they have like a top 10 pick. Maybe they take a shot with Dirk Nowitzki, or maybe they don't screw up the Paul Pierce pick.
That's what I mean. There's so many questions, because Paul Pierce fell all the way to 10, which he shouldn't have. He should have been a lot higher than that.
Paul Pierce and Larry Hughes haunt this town to this day.
Yeah, and you could see why. And that's what I mean. There's so many little things here that, man, if they made the right decisions, that team would have been stacked for years to come. I don't know if they'd be able to keep everybody, you know what I mean? Just given the reality of the economics of the league at the time. But, man, those guys are, that looking back at what the original point of this podcast was, the 93 draft, it's like, yeah, there's a lot of dominoes that fell after that we unfortunately aren't going to be able to answer. But if the Sixers did things right at that time, they would have been a juggernaut for post Jordan era Bulls, which was 98 when they won their last title.
Yeah.
They definitely would have been right there for the early 2000s.
So I'm thinking of Penny, Paul Pierce and Tim Duncan, and I'm starting to cry, which means we need to get back in the capsule and head back to reality here. But Jazz, this was an amazing look back at Sixers history. I enjoyed having you on the podcast. I know that you prefer to not have your voice broadcast almost every week, like multiple times a week. But at the very least, Dave and I should at least try to have you on the pod next season, at least once a month.
Of course. Anytime you guys want me on, I love working with y'all. It's been fun, and we've gotten to know each other a little bit too. So anytime you want to do like a roundtable talk, always down to do that for sure.
Take care, Jazz. I'll talk to you soon. Enjoy the rest of the Sixers offseason. The Sixers, the next portion of Summer League should be gearing up. The Salt Lake City version, I believe.
No, Salt Lake City's wrapped up now. So they'll be getting together for camp, I believe.
Camp. I'm next. Sorry.
Yeah, camp. And I think that having
my NBA calendar is all off because I keep jaunting over to all these different universes.
Yeah, well, I don't blame you, man. Your mind's all getting scrambled. But no, I think we're looking at, from what I'm hearing, likely we'll be training camp in late September in Philly and in Camden at the practice facility. So I don't think we'll have too much going on, but I wouldn't be surprised at the deal. They still have $3.5 million under the apron. They could make a move. They might not. But again, I wouldn't be surprised to see Daryl Morey do something maybe closer to camp. So again, it's not really the offseason. And obviously we have the Kevin Durant stuff going on, which immediately affects the Sixers as a division rival. Now the Celtics are a team who might be involved in that. And I did a podcast with Adam Taylor of Celtics Blog on Monday that you could listen to as well, getting his thoughts on how that would work between Jaylen Brown, KD swap. So not really the offseason, and it's great for us because it gives us more things to talk about. But I love this series. I love the job that you've done with the first couple of episodes. So
I'm glad I got to
come on and chat with you as well.
Always appreciate you having you on in any context. I look forward to talking to you more this season. The three of us, you, me, and Dave, we gotta get together. We gotta hook up,
Anytime. Let's do it, man.
I'll talk to you soon, Jazz. Take care of yourself.
All right, you too.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval, terms apply.